Hello, I'm Pastor Rod Holler of the Cape Baptist Church in Cape Coral, Florida. I hope this message will be a blessing to you. Thanks for listening.
Ecclesiastes, from wealth to wisdom is our study tonight. We must do a review tonight because it leads into so well the verses for tonight. And you'll see that as this study goes on. Ecclesiastes chapter 6, verse 1, Solomon is addressing an evil that he sees. Ecclesiastes 6, 1, there's an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is common among men. Folks, it was common then, it's common now. It was common before Solomon's time, it's going to be common after our time. Ecclesiastes 6, 2, a man to whom God hath given riches, wealth, and honor, so that he wants nothing for his soul of all that he desires, yet God giveth him not power to eat thereof, but a stranger eats it. This is vanity, and it's an evil disease. So he compares it to a vanity, a mental frustration, and to an evil disease that affects the body. So it goes beyond just some spiritual proverb. No, it is a biblical truth, and it's a spiritual truth that's affecting our bodies. When we dedicate ourselves to money rather than to spirituality, and it's all too common. So we saw later on then, after Solomon had said this in chapter 6, he goes on and takes a fatalistic view of life and God. In essence, God controls everything, so what's the point? Now, the subject of the sovereignty of God is an incredible subject. If God is totally in control, then how can man have a free will? Because God is so all-wise, He is still in complete control while we still have a free will. I liken it to, and I don't want to get off onto the sovereignty of God, but I liken it to a train on a track. That train is going to go down that track whether you're on it or not, and if you are on it, whether you have a good attitude or a bad attitude, it's going down that track. That's the best I can do, and the truth is, prayer does change things. When we do things right, it moves the hand of God, and so we don't have to take this fatalistic view, well, God just preordained everything, and no matter what I do, win or lose, you know, it was all ordained by God. I disagree. Because our God is so wise, so powerful, so far above our thoughts that He's in control, and yet we have a free will. So Solomon is looking at this from under the sun, and he's saying no amount of effort is going to change anything. So conclusion, what's the point? But the truth is, you don't have to live in despair. God is on the throne. God has told us to call on Him, and He will answer. And how many times are we in trouble because we did not seek God's face? If we would have sought His face, what would have been prevented? And that's a very real truth. Man does not have to live in despair. So he talks about this problem that's common among people, that they want to have money because if they had wealth, it would answer all of their life's problems. And he says, this is an evil. This is a vanity. This is a disease. It's not right. This is wrong thinking. And therefore, consequently, based upon our thinking, we've got the wrong actions that we're pursuing wealth. Solomon is trying to help us here after his frustrations of trying all these things. He's saying, would you listen to me? Been there, done that. So what does he do? He then sets forth, listen. Instead of pursuing wealth, pursue a good name. And to that end, it's better to have mourning. It's better to have sorrow. It's better to have a rebuke, and it's better to endure to the end with a patient spirit. These will all work together to give you a good name, wisdom, well report, dignity in front of people. Whether they want to respect you or not, they have to know there's something different about you. And Solomon is giving us in these verses, in these passages, conclusions. 1 through 6, basically, he has set the premise and he has told us, I have tried this and this and this and this. They're all vanity and vexation. And he is starting to shift gears here, getting into chapter 7. Let's move on. I've already told you I've tried. Let me tell you the lessons and things that I can advise you with. He's still coming out of the despair, but he is now moving on. Really, our verses are going to be 10 through 14 of chapter 7. Let's read those. Chapter 7, verse 10. Say not there, don't say this. What's the cause that the former days were better than these? For thou dost not inquire wisely concerning this. Wisdom is good with an inheritance, and by it there is profit to them that see the sun. For wisdom is a defense. Money is a defense, but the excellency of knowledge is, and that wisdom giveth life to them that have it. Consider the work of God. For who can make that straight which he hath made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful, but in the day of adversity, consider. God also has set one over against the other to the end that man should find nothing after him. Okay, we're going to be looking at these verses. Consider a simple outline, verse 10, faulty thinking about the past. Verses 11 and 12, wisdom with an inheritance is a good thing. And 13 and 14, rejoice for God is in control. Very simple. But to truly appreciate this, I must go back and get the running start and let this have its perfect work. We've already considered this evil that's common in chapter 6, verse 1. There is this evil common among men. And if God doesn't give you the ability to enjoy what you have, there was no point in earning it. It's vanity and vexation. It's an evil disease. A man may have many wealthy things, but if God does not enable him to enjoy them, it was pointless. Verse 11 of chapter 6, seeing there be many things that increase vanity. There are a lot of things you can try in this world and waste your time. And therein, what is man the better? And this is then when he goes on. Well, let me tell you some things that are better. Get a good name and you do it through mourning, through sorrow, through rebuke, through endurance with an enduring spirit. These all work together to make you a better person. So it is that wealth itself does not bring satisfaction. A good name is far better. Hence, a person seeking a good name must endure hardships in life. I want you to think about the things that lead you to a good name. Mourning. Could we not put that in the negative category side of things? Do you want a good name? Yeah, that's positive. Okay, here's how you get it. Negative, I want you to mourn. Another negative, I want you to sorrow. Another negative, I want you to be rebuked for correction. And then I want you to endure with patience all that you're going through. Endure to the end the trials that you're facing. And all those seem to be what we would call, earthly speaking, on the negative side of the column, but it puts you in the positive side. It works in you a perfect work to make you a better person. So it is the person seeking a good name is enduring these hardships, mourning, sorrow, rebuke, and the end with patience. While the man working for wealth, man, he's got a new car, and look at his house. And we seem to envy that. And it seems on the surface, while the Christian, the good man, seeking God's blessing, why do I have all these trials and tribulations? This guy over here goes to work. He comes back. He's got money. He's going to the finest restaurants. And it's all vanity. It's all vanity. What's the point? Is it really worth it to put up with the negative side of the column here? And he's saying, yes, yes. We did not analyze one verse last week as we focused on the things that pointed and built up the man good name. But we did not dwell on Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 7. Surely oppression maketh a wise man mad, and a gift destroyeth the heart. Seemingly out of place in these things which lead us to a good name. And this is what we need to consider as we look forward to a good name. These negative things are oppression in a way. I believe what he is saying here is chapter 7, verse 7, surely oppression, mourning, sorrow, rebuke, endurance, and trials. Oh Lord, when is the end of this thing? And it oppresses the man, the good man. And the good man is saying, I really want to have a good name. I want to do right before God. But boy, I never had these problems till I sought the Lord. And there's my neighbor driving another new car. And you keep enduring. And you keep enduring. And you must remember, everything that that person is laboring for is vanity. They're going to finally come to the conclusion this was not worth it. And you're going to come to the conclusion, if you hang in there, all of these oppressions that you're subjected to, they're a blessing. So the negative things that make one wise could be bundled together in the oppression. The two components of this verse, we're looking at the first half of it right now. Surely oppression maketh a wise man mad. Now, this is unusual. This word mad is a curious word. It has multiple meanings and uses. It's in the Bible 165 times. 117 times it is translated praise. 14 times it's translated glory. 10 times it's translated boast. 8 times it's translated mad. And then it drops quickly. 3 times shine, 3 times foolish, 2 times fools, 2 times commended, 2 times rage, then 1 time for celebrate, give, marriage, and renowned. But first and foremost, praise. Praise. Meaning to be clear, shine, make a show, foolish, and yet to celebrate. An unusual word. To praise, to renown. So the most common translation is praise, but we must put this together and consider, and I've selected a passage from 1 Samuel that uses this word. 1 Samuel chapter 21, the same original word. 1 Samuel chapter 21, David is being pursued by King Saul. He obviously can't fight back and kill the king. He is put in a very difficult situation, and in my estimation, for 13 years, Saul tried to kill him. And there came a point, I can't take it anymore. I'm going to run to the land of the Philistines, the unsaved, and there I'll find safety. So he runs to the land of the Philistines, and he realizes, maybe this wasn't such a hot idea. So what does he do? He pretends to be insane. And he lets the spit run down his chin, and he scrabbles on walls, and he acts like a lunatic. Let us read. 1 Samuel 21:13, and he, David, changed his behavior before them, the unsaved Philistines, and feigned himself mad, same word, in their hands, and scrabbled on the doors of the gate, and let his spittle run down upon his beard. Then said Achish, who was the king of the Philistines, said unto his servants, Lo, see, this man is mad. Wherefore then have you brought him to me? Have I need of madmen, that ye have brought this fellow to play the madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house? In the circumstances, David is oppressed by King Saul, trying to kill him. Chapter 16 of 1 Samuel, David was anointed to be the next king of Israel while he was but a youth, tending sheep. Chapter 17, he goes out and he slays Goliath. Chapter 18, he's brought into King Saul's inner circle, as king, and King Saul gets jealous and turns on him and tries to kill him. And here he is now. The king is trying to kill me. God anointed him king. What do you think God is doing by allowing the king, Saul, to oppress him? He's making David a different man. He's changing him to be a man with a good name. And he is allowing this incredible hardship in David's life. And it drove him to the point he was mad. I can't take this. What have I done? But does God not train his people with trials and tribulations? They make us a different person. James tells us that the trials of life cause us to want nothing. Honest, I don't want anything this world has. The man is out seeking wealth. It's vanity and vexation. Do you want a good name? Don't want any of that stuff. Want what God wants you to have. A good name. Incredible faith in me for daily living if you endure the trial. Have patience to the end. Is that what not Solomon said in Ecclesiastes? And if you endure, David, even when you can't take it, and how many of us in the times when the heat of the trial is hot, have we never said something in haste or thought something we ought not? Well, isn't that what Solomon also said? Be not hasty in your words. Well, David was hasty, all right. He lost his thinking and went to the land of the Philistines and acted like an idiot. Okay, get me out of this one, Lord. And he went back. You know what? He never did that again. He was growing. And he was learning, I have to trust God. And I believe this is the correlation that we have this oppression on the negative side of the columns with the trials and the tribulation of mourning and sorrow and rebuke and patient enduring unto the end. God says, you'll end up with a good name. This is Christianity. And there are going to be times it's going to drive you mad. But that word mad mostly means to praise. And isn't this not it? When we allow God to have his way with us through the fire, through the valley of the shadow of death, he's with us and we're different people. And what do we say? Praise God. Look what he did with a sinful person like me. And I have nothing, but in him I'm everything. And some of you can look back and you say, I get it. Boy, did I do some stupid things in my life. But God didn't give up, and I finally started to get it, and I endured, and no, I haven't arrived, but I'm not what I was. And you say, praise God, look what he does. He works with all of us, once dead in trespasses and sin, but when you trust Christ and you start to live for him and you start to seek his face, he says, I'm going to work. It's going to be on the negative side of the page for a while, but you're going to get a good name, and that's far greater than anything else this world has to offer. And once David acted like an idiot in the land of the Philistines, but do we really dwell on that? We really remember he's the king. And yes, he blew it with Bathsheba and Uriah, but he is still the king. And God says he's a man after my own heart, and he's the only person in the Bible that got that credit. So it is, this is where we're at. We had to understand that background to come up with that verse to understand it about this oppression. And I want to keep going. Now that people have come through, assuming they came through this process of getting a good name, of mourning, of sorrow, of rebuking, and endurance to the end, he says, basically, let me give you some more news. Ready? Chapter 7, verse 10, now that you've been through all this, say not thou, what's the cause that the former days were better than these? For thou dost not inquire wisely concerning this. Again, the flow of the text, the oppression is driving this person seeking godliness, not understanding fully, and we fumble along the way, and God is working, and in the heat of the moment, don't say, verse 10, what's the cause that the former days were better than these? You know what? I never had these problems until I came to church. I never had these problems until I started to read my Bible every day. Don't say it was better in the former days when you were out seeking the wealth and the good times. Don't do that in your haste. Slow down and patiently endure. Don't say, what's the cause that the former days were better than these? For thou dost not inquire wisely. Don't even think about it, because that is foolishness. Those days were not better. They were like the crackling, remember in the fire where the stick snaps? The thorns just crack. It's like a quick flash and it's gone. Don't be taken in by that. Endure. Slow down and let God have a work in you. Don't let the frustrations get to you. And God doesn't deny. They are oppression. And the trying of your faith is very real. They weren't the good old days. They may have had a semblance thereof, but don't be deceived by it. God is showing us that those are not to be pursued. Well, let's continue on verse 11. Wisdom is good with an inheritance, and by it there is profit to them that see the sun. For wisdom is a defense, money is a defense, but the excellency of knowledge is that wisdom giveth life to them that have it. This verse is comparing the one seeking earthly wealth against the one seeking godly wisdom. Let me read it, interjecting things here. Ready? Chapter 7, verse 12. Let's go there. For wisdom is a defense. That's right. To the man seeking wealth under the sun, his earthly wisdom does have some value. And money is a defense. Money also can defend by its buying power. That's true. But here's the contrast. We're no longer now talking about this guy who's seeking wealth. But in contrast to living under the sun is life above the sun. So the excellency of knowledge is, in other words, the best knowledge is that man needs the wisdom of God, that wisdom, the wisdom of God, not earthly wisdom, gives life to them that have it. Do you have the wisdom of God? You're going to understand. And that is far greater defense than anything worldly wisdom and worldly money will buy. Worldly money may buy the world's best attorneys, but we have the King of Kings and the Judge on our side. Earthly wisdom has its advantages, and money is also very useful, but earthly wisdom and wealth are nothing compared to God and His blessings and His wisdom. Quote, if any man ask, why has he renounced the pursuit of wealth on which many are bent, who are less capable of using it than he is? The answer comes that he has discovered wisdom to be as good as wealth and even better. Not only is wisdom as secure a defense against the ills of life as wealth. Remember, seeking wealth is a disease. Seeking God will give you the wisdom. Stay away from there. It's a defense. Not only is wisdom as secure a defense against the ills of life, such as wealth, but it has this great advantage that it fortifies the heart, while wealth often burdens and enfeebles it. We pursue this, not only does it end up in vanity, but it adds burden to our life. Seek God, and it sets you free. So Solomon is admonishing all men to consider God in this life. You cannot successfully take God out of the equation. It doesn't work. You cannot do that. There is a God. He is alive and He is in control, whether you want to admit it or not, whether you want to live like it or not. And He is crying out, would you listen to me? Would you? I am the King. I threw all of my resources. I have done the homework. I have been there, done that. Don't do that. Let me save you a lot of time. Chapter 7, verse 13, consider the work of God. Come on, think. Who can make that straight which He hath made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful. But in the day of adversity, consider. God also has set the one over against the other, to the end that man should find nothing after him. Bottom line, he's saying, seek God in life. But as we consider that, God has allowed some people to have money. Most not. But some have a lot of money. But every man has the opportunity for wisdom from God. Which is better? Consider the work of God. Such is the nature of His providence that it puts money into the hands of few. But wisdom is within the reach of all. The first is not necessary to happiness. Therefore, it is not offered to men. The latter is. Money doesn't make you happy, so God did not say, well, let me give everybody money. He's saying, wisdom and a relationship with me, I'll offer that to everybody. Got it? A walk with God is so more important. The first is not necessary to happiness, therefore it's not offered to men. The latter is. Therefore God, in His goodness, offers it to the whole of human race. The former can rarely be acquired. Money can rarely be acquired on the world's standards, for God puts it out of the reach of most men, and you cannot make that straight which God has made crooked. You cannot. If God has ordained certain people that are going to have money, He'll bless that. That's up to Him. And there are certain things in the wisdom and the providence of God you're not going to change. Christ said you will always have the poor with you. That doesn't mean we don't help them, but it does mean brace yourself. We're not ever going to have an equal distribution of money. The Bible tells us that. You cannot make straight that which God has made crooked. The latter may be easily attained by every person who carefully and seriously seeks it from God. You're not going to change. Don't even bother trying to make everybody wealthy. It's not going to happen. Verse 14, therefore, just would you be, in the day of prosperity, would you just be joyful? And in the day of adversity, consider, God also has set one against the other. To that end, man should find nothing after him. Here we have the contrasting ideas of prosperity and adversity. Man is to enjoy the times of prosperity. Accept the days of adversity, realizing that God is in control. That's an essence of that statement. In the day of prosperity, be joyful. God allowed it. And in the days of adversity, God is in control and He has set one against the other. He's got a purpose. The days of prosperity are to be enjoyed. Now that sounds silly. Why does God have to tell us that in the good times, enjoy? Because how many times do we tend in our flesh, even when life is good, we still carry a burden? Whatever it may be, we tend in our flesh to always have to find something to be concerned about. Well, the prosperity is going to end. There's something to worry about if you don't have anything else to worry about. So it is, people can be consumed in prosperity, and He tells you, would you enjoy it? It's a blessing. And they're consumed with adversity such they can't enjoy the day of prosperity. So learn to enjoy the good days to their fullest and thank God for them. But He says, when adversity comes, you can't stop it. You cannot make that straight which is crooked. Problems are going to come, and you're not going to stop that. It's a part of God's plan in life, and it's going to make you who you are, and there's a lot of different reasons why we struggle. And He says, just accept it from God. So make the most of them. The days of prosperity come, and they are balanced by the days of adversity. God has given to every man the right amount of prosperous days and the right amount of days of adversity. Therefore, a man's life will be balanced according to God's wisdom for each individual man as He deems fit. And because we have enough of these and enough of these, when we look back on our life, what does it say? Look at the end of the verse. He should find nothing. You didn't miss anything. I took care of the right amount of prosperity and the right amount of adversity. You're not lacking anything. Don't worry about it. Trust me. Enjoy in the good times and in the bad times. Trust me. And I'm working in you to have a good name. And Solomon is used mightily of God to tell us this. So it is, lessons from one who's been there. He can do something that few people in this world can do. Speak from a position of incredible wealth. Incredible wealth. And he's saying, it isn't worth it. It isn't worth it. It led me a life of vanity and frustration and vexation. Seek God. Well, we started with chapter 7, verse 7. Go back there. Surely oppression makes a wise man mad. That's the first half of that verse. Let's look at the back half of that verse. And a gift destroys the heart. Remember the context we're talking about. Do you want a good name? Then have mourning and sorrow and rebuke and patient enduring to the end. Because those oppressions are going to make you the person that God can make you to be. We don't even know what he's doing. We'll know it when it comes. And he says, now let me tell you something. There are no shortcuts. And he's talking about a gift or a bribe, as we would do to a politician or to a police officer or some authority. Let me give you a bribe. I'll get a shortcut to get out of here. He's saying, there's no shortcut to spirituality. Don't do that. And if you think you're going to try something slick, all it's going to do is destroy your thinking. Don't do it. Quote, bribery appears to be a quick way to get things done, but it only turns a wise man into a fool and encourages the corruption already in the human heart. Far better that we wait patiently and humbly for God to work out his will than to get angry and demand our own way. So it is, life above the sun is truly a precious walk with God. And the person that finds this finds true prosperity and a good name. God is on the eternal throne.
This is Pastor Rod Holler. I pray you enjoyed that message. Thanks for listening.